From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. After weeks of intense political battles and street protests in Washington, D.C. and around the country, the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court has ended in the Senate voting to confirm him, and the White House quickly moving to swear him in as a justice. On Monday night, the White House held a ceremonial swearing in for Kavanaugh, during which President Donald Trump apologized to the new justice. Trump has dismissed the mass movement that reared up against Kavanaugh as consisting of, quote, paid protesters and, quote, elevator screamers, claiming that billionaire George Soros has been behind it all. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell also joined in the conspiratorial speculation. He said GOP leaders were literally under assault by protesters and that, quote, many of them were obviously trained to get in our faces, to go to our homes up there, basically almost to attack us in the halls of the Capitol. Well, there is very real anger among ordinary Americans, especially women. Many are focusing their anger on Republican Senator Susan Collins, who decided to vote for Kavanaugh. With the November elections just weeks away, how will the Kavanaugh debacle play out politically? My guest is Jessica Juarez Scruggs, Interim Director of Policy and Legislation at People's Action. She was one of many people that were at the Capitol protesting. Welcome to the program, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, first question, have you received your check from George Soros yet?
I wish. We certainly could use funding to more funding to do grassroots organizing, right? But no, we are sadly missing our check.
So you were in Washington, D.C. among the hundreds and even thousands of women that came in waves from all over the country, from different constituencies, different parts of the different cities, and showed up at the Capitol, some of them having been there for day after day, others showing up for certain days. Give me a sense of what your role was and what the atmosphere was like. I imagine it was quite emotional because among the women gathered were many survivors of sexual assault, right?
Yeah, it was a very, very intense environment. As a survivor of sexual assault myself, I certainly felt it and heard countless stories from women who came from the People's Action Network, came down on the buses from West Virginia, from Maine, from New Hampshire, and from women all over the country. It was an intense environment for survivors who were sort of seeing all of our worst fears and telling our story played out on a national stage and with generational implications.
And actually, let's get a taste of the protests. We have some videos for our TV audience and also our radio audience will hear some of the sounds and sights of what those protests were like. And these are some of the protesters, of the many hundreds and even thousands of protesters that had been gathered in Washington, D.C. over several weeks, especially after the testimony by Dr. Christine Blasey Ford to the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, and even beyond that, right up till Friday, when Susan Collins, Senator Susan Collins of Maine, after a lengthy and rambling speech at 3 p.m. on Friday, before a long weekend, announced her justification for and then decision to vote for Brett Kavanaugh. Jessica, what was the situation like when Collins made her decision? It seems like that was the moment when the whole battle was decided which way it was going to go.
Yeah, I mean, it was gutting. It was gutting. Especially having been with folks who told their stories sometimes for the first time, having talked to people in phone banks who, you know, were concerned not only with the idea that a sexual predator might represent, us on the Supreme Court once again, but also people who are concerned about losing their health care, about people who are concerned about losing the right to organize, people who are concerned about, you know, the ability to have clean air and clean water. I mean, this is a fight that, you know, peaked with the millions of survivors speaking out and feeling the ugliness of that last fight and the courage of Dr. Ford, but it has implications much beyond that. And there were a lot of folks who kind of were organizing in this fight even before those, and who were concerned about where this takes us.
People's Action, I understand, alongside the Women's March and many other activist groups had been gearing up. Trump pointed out that the mass-produced signs were a sign of, you know, either George Soros being behind this all, or that this was just paid protesters. But how much do you think, and that may come back to haunt him and the Republican Party, they may be really undermining the strength of the movement, but how much was this a grassroots effort? It feels like starting from the Women's March in 2017, January 2017, when Trump was inaugurated, that really, and of course the hashtag MeToo movement that began about a year ago, all laid the groundwork to create the storm of popular anger against what we saw playing out.
Yeah, I think that the role of People's Action, our friends at CPD, our friends...
Center for Popular Democracy.
Mm-hmm. The Center for Popular Democracy, our friends at the Women's March, and many of these organizations that have existed for decades doing grassroots organizing, our role is more to help people find a way to make their voices heard, and less to create, you know, we're not creating anger where it isn't already there. The outpouring of emotion, the outpouring of anger, the outpouring of fear, is because our communities are threatened. It's not a game. It's not a political, theater exercise. We are providing, you know, help and structure for ordinary folks who are too busy living their lives, maybe to know where their senator's office number is. Certainly, we're helping people find the number or get on a bus. But we can't create a movement if there's not the seeds already there.
Right. I mean, people know how hard it is to balance our work-life situation at home and then to do that really important activist work. It's a big sacrifice on the individual level. Now, the so-called elevator screamers, as the Republican Party were dismissing them as, I thought were a very effective action. You had ordinary people, often women, confronting senators in elevators as they were transitioning, you know, between in and out of meetings. The senators, of course, didn't like that. But isn't it our right as ordinary people to confront our lawmakers nonviolently, of course? I didn't see anybody, pull out any kind of a weapon or threaten anybody physically, but they were angry and they showed their anger. And those confrontations, you know, isn't it important to have that if we live in a democracy, for our representatives to actually directly hear from people?
Absolutely. I mean, that is their sacred duty. And I kind of am baffled by this response that this is somehow out of line, when our senators work for the people, they are the people's servants, their job is to be our voice. And if they're not willing to meet with constituents, it's not like our members and the people who were reaching out to them wouldn't have loved to sit down and have a lovely chat in their office. But when that is not available to us, when we are not being heard, and when so much is on the line with a lifetime appointment that can affect every single one of our rights, I mean, you simply don't have an option but to reach them in whatever place they are available.
What do you make of the ire aimed at Susan Collins? Now, she's a Republican senator, but she's from Maine, not a very conservative state. Part of why she's in power there, or represents that state, is because she is a so-called moderate Republican. She claims she's pro-abortion, and yet she voted for the Kavanaugh. She voted to confirm Kavanaugh. She waited till the last minute to do it. However, her colleague, Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, said she was going to vote no, but then at the last minute changed her vote to present to make up for the absence of her fellow Republican senator, Steve Daines, which to me means that Lisa Murkowski did not vote against the Kavanaugh confirmation. She was only going to vote no if she knew that her party was going to protect her vote. And in the end, Murkowski also effectively voted for Kavanaugh by voting present instead of no. And then you had Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, who broke with his party and still remains proud, didn't even try to justify his vote, just basically knows that his vote for Kavanaugh will get him reelected by conservatives in West Virginia. I feel like Susan Collins shouldn't be the only target, that Manchin and Murkowski really deserve a lot of anger too, and really every Republican senator who voted for Kavanaugh.
I heartily agree. Our member organizations in West Virginia and Maine, West Virginia Citizen Action Group and Maine People's Alliance both did just an incredible amount of work to make sure that their senators heard heard from their constituents, heard that concern, heard the stories of who will be impacted, not only because of sexual assault survivors who are now getting the message that it's not that we don't hear you, it's that we don't care, but also people who have pre-existing conditions who could lose their health coverage if Kavanaugh rules as he has in the past. From women who are concerned about their reproductive rights, from, you know, teachers who are concerned about the right to organize as public employees, at people who live in coal ash polluted areas who are concerned about the ability to preserve EPA rulings. I mean, the impacts of this are just very far reaching. And I have to say, I disagree with the conventional wisdom that Manchin's vote keeps him safe. Talking to the folks who have been Senator Manchin's voters and supporters and knocked doors and donated money for years and years and years, who came down on buses to D.C., and who, you know, who called his office, who showed up, who phone banked, I'm sure many of them will vote for him, but they certainly won't be enthusiastic. They are certainly counting the days to when they can next run a primary challenge. And I don't think any conservatives, I don't think the people that he's trying to win over are going to vote for him just because he voted for Kavanaugh. I do not believe that that is the case. And the people who counted on him to listen to them and counted on him to stand up for them when political courage was required are deeply, deeply disappointed. So I think that Senator Manchin risks a lot in betraying his constituents.
Well, the New York Times had a piece entitled Joe Manchin's Yes on Kavanaugh Finds Sympathy in West Virginia, and it said, in his home state of West Virginia, voters were, if not encouraging, at least understanding. He had saved himself from political suicide, and went on to quote an emergency dispatcher from a former coal town of Madison in West Virginia, saying, Joe Manchin knows that the people of the state, we are God-fearing, pro-gun, pro-life. His constituents out here told him, basically, you vote this guy in or we're going to vote you out. He figured he better stay in with his people. So that's at least how the New York Times is spinning Manchin's vote and what may happen. And Trump has, of course, also complimented Manchin or supported the fact that Manchin voted yes. You might as well wonder why Manchin doesn't just switch party allegiance and become a Republican, right?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think he needs to think about where his priorities lie and where what he is willing to risk when it matters, because he certainly has not shown a lot of political courage recently.
So the Republican stated strategy has been that it was so critical for them to get Kavanaugh into the Supreme Court because they saw it as energizing their base, which has felt, you know, there have been a lot of polls suggesting that the Republican turnout was going to be lower this year because of just unhappiness with Trump's performance, but that Kavanaugh's confirmation has now encouraged their base to turn up. What about on the other side? How critical is it, or how much, what impact do you think the Kavanaugh, for progressives, it was a loss. How critical will this loss be in the upcoming midterm elections? Now, Susan Collins isn't up for re-election for another 2 years, but many other lawmakers are. And will the Kavanaugh confirmation loss help progressives or hurt them?
Well, I think it will help. Certainly that's what I'm hearing from our folks on the ground who are organizing, knocking doors.
You don't think despair will set in?
I don't think that any of us can afford to despair at this moment. I think certainly it's tempting occasionally, but there is very much too much on the line for our communities, and our communities are painfully aware of that. Our Remember in November program, which is part of our electoral work.
Remember in November, okay.
Remember in November, yes. We are focusing on what our communities have lost over many years, but specifically in the last few years, what has been at risk, from children in cages to lead in the water in our schools, to the mass incarceration that is devastating communities across the country, to the folks whose health care is and remains threatened. We are focusing on telling those stories and bringing our community together and imagining what we can build together. And I have seen nothing but determination and nothing but anxiousness to get out there and change the tide. So I'm optimistic. I'm certainly this, the balance of the court shifting in a conservative direction will be something we will have to contend with for decades to come, and that is not to be minimized. But I believe that this will create, a fairly substantial blue wave, a fairly substantial progressive wave, because I know for myself and for People's Action, we're not interested in, propping up any particular party. What we're interested in people who are going to make real changes for folks on the ground, real pushes toward economic justice, real push for racial and gender justice. And so we're interested in pushing that edge that makes real structural change. So I am confident that this is going to energize people and energize people to vote, not only to vote, but to vote for the kind of candidates we're going to make big changes.
Jessica, many worry that the battle over Kavanaugh's nomination and then confirmation has delegitimized the Supreme Court. What do you think of that? Even several of the sitting Supreme Court justices showed reluctance to, welcome a man who had a terrible performance during the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, showing partisanship, showing this hysterical, emotional outbursts of the kind that just would never have been tolerated from a woman, of course, and just anger. They worry that the Supreme Court now is just going to lose any legitimacy that it had. What do you make of that assertion?
I mean, it's certainly a concern for me. I have been concerned about the future of our court for quite some time. Now, when you have a truly extremist right-wing group handpicking judges, handpicking even the candidate pool, let alone the actual nominee, and not just for the Supreme Court, but up and down the bench, the legitimacy of our courts is threatened. It has been hijacked, and it's going to take us a long time to get that back.
Isn't it important at this moment to remind ourselves that the Supreme Court basically is there to determine whether laws are being observed? They're not there to make laws. The power to make laws lies with Congress and the president, and the power to really make laws lies with Congress, or the president just having approval or disapproval power. I feel like that fact has been lost on a lot of us who, of course, have very legitimate worries about the Supreme Court. But if you have a different Congress, we ordinary people may not be able to change the makeup of the Supreme Court, but we have the ability to change the makeup of Congress, which is the law-setting body in this country, right?
Absolutely. And I think that a lot of our kind of lawmaking has been shifted to the courts in recent years because of gridlock and because of just the lack of a functioning Congress. But it does not have to be that way. And we absolutely have the power to turn that tide. And I take some comfort in the fact that it's not as if the Supreme Court has been a flawless body. I mean, we have Dred Scott, we have so many cases, we have Korematsu, we have so many cases where the Supreme Court has chosen to uphold absolutely gross injustice. And we have fought our way back from that. So am I concerned about the Supreme Court? Absolutely. But is it the be all and end all? No, it's not.
So certainly Congress, a newly formed Congress after this November's elections, can legislate, can restore the things that could be lost or have already been lost. It remains to be seen. Jessica, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for People's Action where they can find out about your Remember in November action.
Yes, absolutely. If you go to www.peoplesaction.org, you can take the Remember in November pledge and find out all about our election work and all about the campaigns that we're running and the 48 member organizations that make up the network across the country. So encourage you to check it out and get active.
Well, we'll post a link to that from our website. Thanks again, Jessica.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Jessica Juarez Scruggs, Interim Director of Policy and Legislation at the group People's Action. We've been discussing all of the activism around the Kavanaugh confirmation and what comes next politically. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.